Good morning. What I'm doing, I taught economics down at WT. We're trying to get the... Okay, are we good on the sound, Dan? Okay. Taught econ down at WT for a while, and I actually used the Bible quite a bit in the lectures, and I got really good response from the students and the staff and the administration. So I can use it more if you want. So I'm going to start out, count your blessings, and this will be a good illustration. It starts out, when upon life billows you a tempest toss. Does anyone know what a billow is? It's a wave. It's an out-of-control big wave. So when upon life billows you a tempest toss, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings. So here's the story. I grew up in Florida. I was around water a lot. We played in water. We lived in it. As in St. Pete, Florida, so the next county west of us was Mexico. You go south, the next county is Cuba. So we were out. So Marsh and I have been married a couple of years, and I said, let's go to Key Largo and learn how to scuba dive and then go on a trip in the Bahamas scuba diving. So one day we had off. It was over Christmas. So Christmas Day, we went to Key Largo State Park, and they have snorkeling trips out to the reef. So let me describe this. Key Largo is an island, but about 6 miles offshore is a coral reef, and you get in a little boat. There were about 12 of us on the boat. There was a Methodist church class, captain and the mate, and Mark and I. And we get in the boat, and we start cruising offshore to go 6 miles out off the coast to go snorkeling. And it was a hazy day with about a half-mile visibility. So this Kansas girl has never been out on open water. I'm having a ball. She's nervous. And we had seen Jaws about 2 weeks before that. So very quickly, we lose sight of land. And we end up going out on the reef. And it was a pretty wavy day. So you can hear the waves crashing on the reef. We were on the inside of the reef. So the waves weren't as big. But on the reef was a boat overturned with a hole on it, smashing up and down on the reef. And nonchalantly, the captain said, probably a couple drug runners. They do this often. There'll be a couple bodies washing up. Okay, let's get our gear on. We're going swimming. And our eyes were that big. Finally get her in the water, and here's where this hymn comes in. We were about as far from the boat as from me to the wall in the back. Not that far. She squeezed my hand and said, the boat's gone. What she did is she lifted her head up. Remember, you're horizontal in the water. So you're 4 foot wave, so the wave is 4 feet above your head. She looked when she was at the bottom, the trough of the wave, and all she could see was water. And just nonchalant, in my immature self at the time, I just said, wait till you're at the top of the wave, then lift your head and look around. And then you can see the boat. And when you do that, you see the boat, it's there, we're okay. And now we can enjoy the fish and the 6 foot barracuda that was following us, they're gorgeous fish. So that's kind of what I want to do today. Let's lift our heads up and look around, and you'll find we're in wonderful shape. And I like what Winston said this morning, getting close to God, you can hear his heartbeat. I love you, I love you. And the next part is follow me, follow me. Okay, now let's get into the sermon here. Got a blank page here. Well, I'll get into it. So let me make sure the clicker works. Pretty odd point to stand. Let me go to the next page. There we go. Okay. Introduction. First of all, based on what comments I got last time, there will be no test or quiz at the end of this. So sit back and relax, okay? Note-taking, you might want to write down the Bible stories because I'm not going to give you I'll give you an overview of the Bible story. Remember, we're just lifting our head, looking around, because I want to teach some principles here. I'm going to throw graphs up. If you're no good at graphs and you can't understand them, just disregard it, and we'll come back to something else, okay? Those of you that like them, we'll get along, okay? Want to talk about economics a little bit? What is it? It's the study of scarcity. There's unlimited wants we have and limited resources. Is there an unlimited God? No. So we've got a way out here. Okay, conservative versus liberal economists. Gorbachev visited Margaret Thatcher in England, and everywhere they went, there was just the right amount of bread. Now, remember, he's a communist, and they had a planned economy. This is the end of the Soviet Union. And he looked at Margaret, he said, "Who's managing your bread? It's always perfect." And she said, "Nobody. The market system does it." And she says, "You know what? If you'd let go a little bit, you'd have more time to go out and play golf and go see your friends than managing the economy." So a conservative economist will tend to say, just leave it alone, the price market system will take care of itself, and we'll deal with that. There's problems with that, but generally that's a good idea. How many conservative economists do you need? One, and he already has the job. Basically do nothing, okay? Liberal economists think you need to manipulate the economy, so you need a lot of them. That's why most economists you see on TV or whatever will tend to be liberal, because that's where the job market is. Okay, again, back to economics, we study what's produced, how it's produced, and who gets it. Okay, is there a limit to salvation that God gives us? No. So if we show Christianity in essence. Now, I heard economics described in an education system, it's like plowing a field. When you take principles of economics, you plow the whole field. You study most all the topics, but you only plow that deep. And each time you take a new class, you plow a little deeper. We're going to drive by the field and look at it. Okay? Okay. Let's see if I've missed anything on these notes. I just wrote a note there. This is like asking Steve to do Old Testament, New Testament survey in 30 minutes. So we'll do our best. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. The Bible is not an economics textbook. I'll use a few biblical quotes to illustrate economics concepts. But don't go back and say, well, the Bible is an economics textbook. It isn't. Okay? We can use economics to help interpret a little bit of it. Our faith and trust should be in Jesus, not our knowledge and trust in the economy. The pagan religions, the Canaanite religion, was actually economics religion. When you have your firstborn, bring it to the temple, we'll sacrifice it to the idol, and then you will be more prosperous. Okay? That was an economics religion. Jesus said, God said, don't do that. Okay? Don't make the market system a god. Okay? No one can serve two masters. So don't do that, and we're not going to go there this morning. We'll illustrate where we're going, illustrate economic issues today. Okay, Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun. So you're going to see really incredible supply and demand. There's a really good illustration in the Bible that we use today's tools in an ancient setting. Okay, and dispensations, I'll get that on the next page. Final goal is to leave you today feeling good and confident in God. Now, dispensations. We're not going to go over that today. But this is not in the Bible. But we use it as a tool to interpret the Bible. Everybody online with me? Okay, so that's what I'm going to do today. A lot of what I'm going to show you isn't in the Bible. We're just going to use tools to help you understand it better. Okay. This was the reading this morning. We're stewards of the planet, of assets. As Christians, God owns them. Remember the parable of the talents? The people that got the talents didn't own the talents. They were in charge of taking care of them. So a Christian interpretation of economics and assets and wealth belongs to God, but he expects us to take care of it. I have a friend who's a Muslim, and I asked him, so what do the Muslims believe? He said, no, we own the stuff. Okay, we Christians don't. Okay, and again, we don't need to worry about it. God's going to take care of us. Okay. Deuteronomy 27, Moses gives a lecture to the Israelites, and he says, do these things, don't do these things, and if you follow these, you will be prosperous. If you don't, it's going to get bad. This is something I would recommend you read, 27th chapter of 27th and 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. Now read this. Cursed is one who displaces his neighbor's boundary marker or boundary stone. Private property is private property. If it's not yours, get your hands off of it. Okay? Martha's grandfather's parents immigrated from Russia. They were small children, so his grandparents were adults. And I asked him, so what did they say about the Russians? And he said, this man was racist. He said, all of the Russians, they were awful. They would steal everything. You had to bring your cows and equipment in at night. It was a lot of work. Later on, I talked to a girl who was, well, a graduate from WT, who did come from Russia. I said, what's Russia like? She said, they steal from you. You have to bring everything in at night. Okay, if people are always stealing from you, you can't progress as well. Drive through the countryside, you see cows out in the pasture. How can we do that? We have a culture here where you don't steal the cows in the pasture. Are we more prosperous that way? Of course. So there's practical ends of this. Chris says, the one who misleads a person who is blind on the road. Okay, in economics, we call that asymmetrical information. The used car salesman knows more about the car than you do. Information is not symmetrical. Don't abuse that. It's right here. Okay? If I have a favorite verse in the Bible, it's this one. Cursed is one who distorts the justice due a stranger, refugee, traveler, an orphan, or a widow. Notice what it says at the end of all of these verses. And all the people say amen. Amen says, I agree to that. Okay? So don't pervert justice to these. These are vulnerable people in your society. Now, I'm going to come back to this, but one of the weaknesses in the market and price system is it disregards this group. The market system works great, pricing works great, and I have people say, well, the market supports this behavior, but it doesn't support taking advantage of the vulnerable. Does that make sense? So if you put Christianity with a market, free market capitalist system, it works. If you take God out of it, I don't care what economic system you have, it'll fail. Or while I'm on, this is just briefly, Adam Smith, about 200 years ago, wrote the blueprint for capitalism. But he also described what you'd call communism, where you have communal ownership of property. He says that works very well in a family. How many microwaves do you have in your kitchen? Probably one. You share it. But if you set up a restaurant, your microwave is your microwave. McDonald's isn't going to come in and use your microwave. Does that make sense? So he said it depends how big you get the system. Okay, it doesn't work on a national system. Okay, cursed is he who attacks his neighbor in secret. Okay, don't do deceitful acts. Cursed is he who accepts a bribe to attack an innocent person. Corruption. It's always been there. It's always been a problem. If you want to make me mad, say, well, that's the way it is, and you got to learn to live with it. No, you don't. Okay, and the last verse says, cursed is anyone who does not fulfill the words of this law by doing them. So turning a blind eye to these things is as bad as doing these things. Now, if you go back to Deuteronomy, there's other things in this list. Okay. Okay. The next page here is the benefits of following this and the disadvantages of it. I like this one right at the end. You will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow. What's America doing right now? We're begging other countries to give us more oil so we can get the price down. Now, if you look at the bad side, the last one. Okay, the good list is about this long. The bad list is about this long. And it ends, you will be so destitute, you'll go back to Egypt where you came from a slave. Remember, he's reading this to the Israelites. And you will be so disgusting, you can't even sell yourself as a slave. It talks about you'll be eating your own children. Really bad stuff. So these are good principles to go by. Okay, now let's do a story here. So Samaria, the capital of the Israelite tribes that broke away, was besieged by Ben-Hadad, king of Aram. And I'll throw it up here. Now it's... So I'll read the first part. Now it came about after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, gathered all his army and went up and besieged Samaria. So there was a severe famine in Samaria, and behold, they kept besieging it until a donkey's head sold for 80 shekels of silver and a fourth of a cab of dove's dung sold for 5 shekels of silver. Let me go down to the next paragraph. I translated this for what you can understand. A donkey's head sold for $708, current price of silver. And an ounce of food-grade pigeon poop sold for $5.50. They didn't just have a shortage of baby formula. They had some serious. And what are they doing with pigeon poop? Now, I've used this for an example for years, but probably in the last 12 months, I broke that code. You use pigeon poop in the refining of leather, the tanning of leather. They still do this in Morocco. You also use cow urine and all sorts of other nasty stuff. It smells bad. It's awful. It's nasty. But they actually raise pigeons and sell pigeon poop. So there was a market for pigeon poop. So that's a fine Moroccan leather purse right there. Did you all see the Queen Elizabeth and the little bear having tea? Did you see her pull a sandwich out of the purse? Put it back in the purse. Okay? So are you with me? So they are so destitute, they're eating pigeon poop. Okay? So the king hates Elisha, but they go to Elisha anyway. Okay? And Elisha says, in a day, let me turn my page so I see what you're in. Okay. So let me tell you the story. So the city's besieged. They go to Elisha. Elisha says, tomorrow you'll be able to buy fine flour for 4 cents an ounce and barley for 2 cents an ounce. It's compared to $5 a pound for pigeon poop. Good news, bad news. So what did the king's representative say? We don't know for sure. Maybe we need to do some more research. Okay? You heard that line, the doubt issues? What did Satan say when he went to Eve? She said, we can't eat of this tree. Are you sure? We need to do more research. Okay. Elisha said, well, you'll see it, but you won't eat it. You won't participate. So some lepers were there that night. They said, we're dying anyway. The Israelites aren't going to give us any food because they're eating pigeon poop. So let's go and talk to the enemy. Maybe they'll give us something. If not, they'll kill us. We're going to die anyway. So they go to the camp, and what God had done is he'd made a great noise. Sounded like an army coming to invade. And so the enemy left and dropped everything. So everything was there. So the lepers started hoarding it, and they thought, this isn't right. So they went and told the people in the city. And when the word finally got out, there was a mass riot running out the gate, and they ran over the diplomat there and killed him. But when the market cleared, flour is selling for 4 cents an ounce and barley for 2 cents. So now we're going to do the econ stuff. Okay. This is the demand curve. This is what the market's like right now, a snapshot. And what depends on how much is sold is the price. We're seeing this with gas. It hasn't hit yet. As the price goes up, you buy less of the commodity. Right now we're in the whiny stage. But the streets were still congested yesterday. When you'll be able to drive down the street by yourself, then people are buying less gasoline because the price is too high. So the law of demand is, as the price goes up, the quantity you buy goes down. Everybody with me? Okay. Won't be on the test. Okay. Now, if you change something else besides the price, like you give people more money, it will change everything. Price of related goods, it will change anything. So what's a related good to pigeon poop? Fine flour. How many of you would switch from pigeon poop to eating a, you know, bear's bread? Matt's going, I'm there. Down there. Okay. Let's go to supply. Now, supply is a cost graph. If I can sell something for, in this case, $125, will I spend $50 producing it? Yeah, sure. Will I spend $75 producing it? I'll keep helping us. When we get to the vineyard store, you can see where the entrepreneur keeps spending more money because the sales price is high enough, he can justify a profit. And in this case, number of firms in the market. Did the number of sellers of flour jump up? Yeah, because they were stealing all the stuff from the enemy. Okay. So, this graph shows pigeon poop. We're in equilibrium. The walls are up. The enemy's still there. But when the enemy leaves, we had a right shift in supply because there's all this flour laying around. And so the price drops. Everybody with me? Makes sense? Now, if we look at pigeon poop, since flour is a related product to pigeon poop, okay, so the price of flour goes down, so the demand for pigeon poop goes left. So where did the price end up for pigeon poop? Probably back where it was for tanning leather. Sure wasn't $5 an ounce. So do you understand that story a little more, how the mechanics worked on this? Okay. Can I find very many more of these in the Bible? No, because it's not an econ textbook. Okay? Now, in Israel, building code says you have to put up a solar hot water heater, and these things work well. This is a mature technology. So in Israel, if you want a new water heater, you can get electric, gas, or solar. And 90% of the households in Israel have solar hot water heaters. Why would they do that? Because they're buying oil from their enemies. Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. So they have an outlet here. Does that make sense? So this is part related. Good. So let's go on. Okay, let me catch up on my notes. Okay, I hit this briefly. The price system works well, but keep in mind the disadvantage in society. Okay, we have green rules. Next one, and we'll come back to that one. Factors of production, then I'll go over this pretty quick because I'm running out of time. I always do that. So this is where the man has a vineyard and he hires workers at a denarius, that is a day's wage. He realizes he's not going to get all the grapes in, so he goes out later in the day and he offers a denarius to those workers, even though they're going to work a partial day. And he does this throughout, so the last workers work 1 hour and they get a full day's pay. At the end of the day, the first workers are grumbling. Well, that's not fair. So here's the reply to fair. Fair is where they show pigs and chickens. Okay, and that's about all that's worth. What the entrepreneur said, and let me pick up the next page, and I'll go back over this. What the entrepreneur said, that was a contract. Now, I have union concept here. What unions say is we should be able to come in and discuss how much of the profit you get. So let's go over this. To produce a product, you need labor, capital, and land. In this case, we got the labor. That's the capital would be the grapevines and the grape trellises, the lands that it's growing in. And an entrepreneur, I don't know why the French got the econ terms, but they did. Entrepreneurs puts these together, and if he can buy it cheap and sell, do something with it and sell it for more, then he wins with profit. Labor already got wages. Now, does the Bible teach you shouldn't have labor unions? I'm not going to go that far. This is one example, and this is how it was done at that time, and Jesus used it for an example. So I'm not going to get too political on this. Okay, let's talk about money a little bit. Money, what is it? Okay, it's anything that can be used and accepted by people in exchange for goods and services. It can be anything. There's a good paper written where cigarettes were used in prison camps in World War II. And I got a little paper on it published afterwards. Okay? Now, money has attributes where you use it for medium of exchange to buy and sell. It works great for that. Okay? Imagine if I grow carrots. No, I have sheep and a vegetarian's growing carrots, but I want carrots in my mutton stew. And I go to him and I say, I'll trade you sheep for some carrots. And he says, I'm a vegetarian. I don't want your sheep. You see the problem? But what if I sell the sheep and go to him and give him money for the carrots? You see how? So money is lubricating exchange. It does that well. The second thing it does, it's a unit of account. That's what Elisha did. Flour will sell for 4 cents an ounce. Was he selling flour? No. He was not doing an exchange, but he used that to assign value. This is where inflation messes things up because the values are changing, and we can't tell how much something's worth because it's a moving target. So inflation will hamper the price system from working. Store value. Save your money. Well, inflation will eat it up, okay? It does not do good as a store of value. And then standard of deferred payment, meaning debt, you can promise to pay back something in the future and get the benefit today. Okay, debt's discussed some in the Bible. That's what money does. But the first thing it does well, second, okay. Third one, it's a failure, okay? Money will blow up in your face. And I'm convinced it's part of our DNA. Humans will invent money out of the blue almost. But it will blow up in your face. You'll either not have enough and you'll have deflation, which caused the Great Depression, or you'll have too much and you'll have superinflation, which destroyed Germany after World War I. Here's an inflation story in Germany. I read this in a book. This kid, he was a child during this era. He said his mother used to put all their money they would get in a large basket and keep it on the front porch. It was so valueless, nobody would steal it. So he gets up one morning, and the money's all there, but somebody stole the basket. Okay? So since it's in the news, let's see. Let's go here. I'll read the first one in Isaiah. Dross is, if you heat up metal till it's molten, you'll get garbage at the top of it. That's dross. So your silver has become dross, your choice wine diluted with water. That's describing inflation. That's in Isaiah. And then James talked about it, your gold and silver has corroded. They had problems. Do you know, always had problems with inflation? Okay. Wizard of Oz books are about inflation and deflation. Federal Reserve Bank is there to keep the money supply from blowing up in our face. That's what it was invented for. And they didn't used to call them recessions or depressions. They called them panics. They went from panic to depression. What's the difference? How it's spelled. What's the difference between a depression and a recession? How it's spelled. It's all the same thing, okay? So back in the late 40s, whoops. Let me go back here. They were also supposed to help take care of the economy. Not a great thing. And the Fed is not elected. It's kind of a quasi-government deal. Do you want Congress in charge of the money? You want the president in charge? So remember, money will blow up in your face. It's messy. It's nasty. And we do the best we can. Okay. Inflation is more money producing the same number of goods. Now, a widget is a mythical product we use in economics. But if we start out with, whoops, I'm hitting the wrong buttons, $10 and 10 widgets, then each widget will sell for $1. If we add 10 more dollars and we have $20 in the economy, then each widget will sell for $2. Okay, and something, don't worry about the rest of it, okay? We'll go to the next one. Okay, Job, they used animals and such for money. But by Elisha's time, they were actually using money. So, okay, let me tell you, now that you're experts in supply and demand, let me show you the supply and demand curve for money. The supply curve is odd. It's vertical. Federal Reserve can basically conjure up money. It's a little more complicated than that. But the demand, that's going to the bank and borrowing money. Oh, by the way, money that we're applying here is currency and coin and deposits in banks. So we have the price of money is the current interest rate, so right there. So if the Fed increases the supply of money, and they will work with Congress with the stimulus package for COVID, what happens to interest rates? Interest rates go down. Now people get excited and happy and buy houses and cars and such, but now we have more money in the economy, so prices start going up. So how do they fix it? You reduce the money supply. What's the trade-off? Higher interest rates. The Fed does not change interest rates. They change the supply of money. Now, if the government already said we're going to do a stimulus for COVID, but on the backside, you're going to have a hangover. It's going to happen. We're going to have to deal with it. But we think it's more fun to get drunk now than to have a hangover in the future. Y'all wouldn't be so grumpy now. You would have said, well, let's not get drunk to begin with, okay? So that's where we are now. Will this inflation be long-lasting? My opinion, I don't think so. I think it will run out. The Fed's experienced on doing this. Will we tighten things up? Will it be a little bit harder? Yeah, but really. Okay. Now, the other thing that complicates it is people get excited, and they want to borrow more, buy more, whatever, or they want to buy less. So this is all a moving target, and they're using six-month-old information, and it's just difficult. Okay. So it doesn't work well. Is everybody with me? Well, what do we have? We have God. We don't have to worry about it. Okay? Much. Okay. Pay attention. Take care of your stuff. Okay. So there's the effect of business. But the bottom line, we as individuals have no influence over any of this. Okay. It's going to be hot today. Do we have any influence over that? No, it's going to be hot. Okay. So put on a hat when you go outside. Prepare yourself for the problem, but you can't fix it. Okay, let me see what this one's about. You know, we've got enough time to finish. Oh, gasoline prices. OPEC. O and OPEC does not stand for oil. It stands for organization. P is petroleum. Okay, so OPEC is a cartel. That's when a group of people get together and try and form a monopoly, and the monopoly can control the supply. And you saw how changing the supply can change prices. They want to sell oil for as much as they can get by with, but there's trade-offs. If they reduce the supply and you're not selling anything, you're not making any money. So it's this fancy trade-off. Now, if the big players like Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Nigeria decide to put the squeeze on oil supplies, then the little guys will kind of sneak in and sell. People are cartel cheat. Okay, but this graph up here, the only reason I threw this up is so you can see how many times OPEC is changing the supply of oil. Okay, now when the price gets up, it's good in Midland and Odessa, so they start fracking more and flooding the market with oil, and we're not in OPEC because it's against law for Americans to do cartel stuff. And so what we're going to see is we're going to see it takes a while for the production to ramp up. Mexico, Canada, and Russia are also not in OPEC. So you're going to see the production ramp up, and you're going to see prices drop. Gasoline prices. Don't throw rocks at me. It's not Biden's fault. Now, remember, do not pervert justice to the sojourner. Presidents are in there a short time, so he's a sojourner. Let's be respectful. Okay? If you see what affects the price of gasoline, okay, the blue is gasoline price, the red is crude oil price. The price of crude oil on the international market is what ends up as the gasoline price. So watch oil production and their price, and watch gasoline, and you can have a pretty good prediction. So last I saw oil selling for $140 a barrel, I guarantee you it gets people excited, and they're going to turn their wells back on. Okay, and you're going to see production come up. Okay, now, if we correct for inflation, whoops, this is the price of gasoline. These are just regular dollars. These are corrected for inflation. And look, this is based on $2,010, I think. But gasoline got up over $3 a gallon at the end of the energy crisis, Iran problems. But our cars only got half the mileage back then that they do now. So you're looking at $6 a gallon gasoline. We've been there before. Did the nation collapse? Does anybody even remember this? Not really. Remember I said you're going to feel good when we get done? Okay. It's not that bad. Okay? Now, this is my last graph slide. How much do we actually spend on stuff? At the turn of the century, we spent 43% of our income on food. Now we spend, well, in 2003, we spent 13%. The latest figures I looked at this morning was 6% of our income we spend on food. So what if the price of food totally doubles on everything? We'll be back to where we were in 2003. Okay? I meant to put the slide in. There was a retired Army general in the 50s that had a quote. This is in the 50s. So how can we whine about our economy when our two biggest problems in America are trying to lose weight and trying to find a place to park? Okay. Housing, where are we spending our money? Housing and other is cars. They didn't have cars in 1900, just very few. Okay. Ford hadn't put his out yet. So the other wasn't very big. Okay. So a poor country where they have poverty, Pakistan spends about 45% of its income on food, or it's 6. Okay? So that's why I put in the hymn, count your blessings. Life's good right now. Can it go bad? Yes. Look at the Ukraine. Ukraine would have looked very much like this. How is it now? Now, we can go through interest rates, demand, production, all these things. What caused the recession? What caused Sodom and Gomorrah's recession? God is the ultimate instigator of that. And I would throw that out even in class. It's like maybe somebody says, we're not really totally sure what caused the Great Depression. They're still studying that one. The best interpretation I buy is they shrunk the money supply and they had deflation and that created a cascade of things. But maybe God was upset with a few things. Well, anyway, So the conclusion is, I can't find that in my notes. So the world belongs to God. He expects us to be good stewards of it. Okay? Salvation through trust in Jesus is the greatest gift, and that's free. There is no shortage of salvation. That's your Presbyterian, I guess, but you know, with predestination, but even they wouldn't do that. So our salvation, forgiveness of sins, is unlimited. All we have to do is trust Jesus. That's the ultimate asset, isn't it? That's the inheritance into heaven and God being with us here now. But you trust in Jesus. He paid the price. Remember what he said on the cross? It's finished. The debt is paid off. So that's the takeaway here. The minor takeaway is the market system works well. There must be questions about it. Okay? So, any questions? Okay, she's gone. Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, and that's my interpretation of biblical economics, and I hope you were able to use something. The texts are something to go back and read, Deuteronomy, and then the story of the siege are good to read. So, that's all I have. The musicians could come up. My bicycle.